Welcome back. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The debate over hydraulic fracturing or fracking in California is heating up. Fracking uses a high-pressure injection of water, chemicals, and sand to break up rock so that oil and gas can be released and pumped out. Fracking was originally developed more than 60 years ago, and the technique has raised questions about contamination of underground aquifers, and in California, we have the added concerns of earthquakes. So what is the state of fracking here in California? Well, it's hard to know. According to the Environmental Working Group, California regulators have turned a blind eye to fracking. According to the EWG, state regulators say they have no idea how many oil and gas wells have been fracked in California, despite having requested and received $3 million in new funding in 2010 to regulate the practice. Lacking actual data, regulators insist that drilling companies rarely use the technology in California. According to the environmental group, fracking has been used in the state since 1953 and is now widespread. Just 2 weeks ago, a state Senate panel approved legislation that would ban hydraulic fracturing in California until regulators write rules governing the procedure. And many city councils up and down the state of California, mostly in Southern California, have also passed a ban. So what do we know? What don't we know? And what does the science say about fracking? Where do you stand on fracking? And what questions do you have? Today, we're joined by Avner Vengosh. He's professor of earth and ocean sciences at Duke University. He focuses on geochemistry, water quality, and hydrofracking. Hi, Avner. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's great to have you. We're also joined by Paul Ferrazzi, Executive Director of the LA-based Citizens Coalition for a Safe Community, which encourages citizens to participate in the governmental process. Hi, Paul. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose.
So first off, let's talk about fracking just generally. Avner, why don't you just describe how fracking actually works?
Well, it's a kind of a complex industrial procedure. Starting with drilling, starting with building infrastructure of drilling pads and very extensive pathways for trucks. And once it's starting, we're talking about hundreds of trucks moving from to the site, bringing water and chemicals for the fracking procedure. Drilling will go horizontally to the shale gas formation to extract, to frack and release gas that normally you cannot get with conventional drilling. And then after that, it will be producing of the wells to extract the gas.
And what does the science tell us about how this affects, for example, water quality? There's been Gasland, for example. If you Google the word fracking, so many articles come up. But what does the science actually tell us?
Well, it's kind of the weird situation that the science, we don't have much science. So in Duke University, we've been pioneering and trying to study the effect of shale gas drilling and fracking and water quality, and I can talk about the result of our studies published last year and just recently in the proceeding of National Academy of Science. But the fact is there aren't too many publications, so there is kind of a gap between the amount of the debate and what is on state relative to the actual research that has been conducted.
And why is that? People are so concerned about fracking. The movie came out. There's been a lot of attention on fracking. Why isn't there much science?
That's a good question. I mean, I know there is a lot of data going on, and most of the data is with the hand of the industry. So that's a question perhaps to ask them why this data is not always available and not transparent. It's interesting. Maybe people are worried. Scientists, my colleagues, would be worried to go into that because, for example, after publication of our first paper, we've been kind of being attacked by the industry, and so it's kind of perhaps kind of harsh for scientists to go into this battlefield, perhaps.
So there's not much science out there, and you're saying that industry perhaps has this information, but it's proprietary, and therefore you don't have access to it?
Well, there are several, I mean, when we're talking about fracking, there are several issues we need to understand, and there are kind of some of them are perhaps concepts of people. So the one concept is the fracking fluid, is the fluids that being used for the activate the fracturing and release of the gas from the shell formation, and most of the attention was given to that kind of fluid because we don't know their composition, for what we know, some of the fluids there, some of the chemical could be a toxic. So this is one level of kind of unknown, and there is, and the industry has not fully revealed this information with the actual concentration to the public. But the problem, as I see it, are much more comprehensive. And on one hand, we have the issues of potential stray gas flowing from associated with the activity of the fracking into shallow wells and causing contamination of drinking water wells with a high level of methane. This supersaturation of methane can cause the water to be put in fire, as we've seen in Gasland. But there are many other issues, environmental issues, that kind of people don't see much. For example, what do you do with the formation fluids that coming together with the gas? For example, in the Marcellus Shale in northeastern United States, this produced water contain high level of toxic chemical. It's natural occurring, but nonetheless very toxic. High level of natural occurring radioactivity, and dumping or disposal of this brines could cause massive environmental issues. So I think the issues with the shale gas drilling and fracking is much more behind the fracking fluid themselves, and have to be kind of looking much more comprehensive and much more large-scale evaluation. What does fracking, how it affects the environment?
Paul Ferrazzi, you work with concerned communities in Southern California. What has your experience been like in trying to get this information from the industry?
Mostly it's been just more or less doing PRAs to get information on specific wells. We had two wells in 2006 that had accidental releases that were part of what the operator of the Inglewood oil field called their deep drilling program, which was at 10,000 feet into the Sentis region of our formation.
And can I ask you, what is a PRA?
Public Records Act request.
Okay, and you file that with?
With Dogger for well records.
Dogger for well records.
Mm-hmm. In those well records, they have a well history, and sometimes you'll see that they've noted that they did a fracturing job as a well stimulation technique.
And who is Dogger?
The Department of Oil, Gas, and Geothermal Resources.
Got it. Okay. I just want to put all that out there, because while people are somewhat familiar with fracking, a lot of people are not familiar with the regulators and what goes on behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. Well, we found that the two wells that did have accidental releases. One that had gases that hung over one particular neighborhood for 36 hours had been hydraulically fractured. The operator indicated that this was after, or this was before they actually did the fracturing job on the well. But now the operator is planning to fracture four wells in the nodular shale inside the surface area of the oil field. But they did have a plan in 2005 and 2009 that they put before Dogger and the city of Culver City to drill under the Bayona Creek and into and under residential neighborhoods in Culver City.
And before we get into specifics about what's happening in California, let's take a step back here. And again, turning to the Environmental Working Group, and they were not available to join us today, but they put out a damning study recently saying that California regulators are turning a blind eye to fracking. And according to their report, the State Division of Oil, Gas, and Geothermal Resources says it does not plan to monitor or manage use of fracking unless the legislature requires it. So can you just give us an overview? What was your response to the EWG's report?
In dealing with Division of Oil, Gas, and Geothermal Resources, I could understand what, that was typical of the Dogger response, in that there are a number of different wells that are actually leaking, old wells, abandoned wells that are leaking, that they haven't been able to address correctly. One in Playa Vista that's leaking millions of cubic feet of methane into the atmosphere, but it's been abandoned twice, and they haven't been able to, I think they're afraid that if they try it a third time, it'll be worse than it is now, but you can see it coming up in the lagoon, the artificial lagoon they built to replace the marshland that they destroyed to build the Playa Vista project. So that's sort of what we found here. And with the issues of uplift and subsidence, which is part of the underground injection that they use as far as enhanced recovery, and then adding hydraulic fracturing, is that going to have a synergistic relationship on the uplift and subsidence we're already seeing in, residential homes, along with the fact that we know that they've been hydraulically fracturing three formations in the early 2000s in the Inglewood oil field, where they were telling us that they had never, or they didn't, they weren't hydraulically fracturing when the community asked about it.
What is the significance of the state Senate panel deciding to ban hydraulic fracturing in California until regulators write rules governing the procedure? This happened 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I'm not sure, because there's sort of a doublespeak coming out
Sacramento.
Jason Marshall, as far as that they cannot regulate, or they cannot define, or they cannot ban hydraulic fracturing until they define it. So that bill is actually asking them to define it. Ban it before they define it.
So right now in California, it's not defined.
No, there's no...
Under state law.
No, it's just considered a well stimulation technique. I believe it should have been controlled under the underground injection program, in that states that pressures should not exceed formation fracture pressures. So, in essence, that section of the California Code of Regulations would ban the practice of hydraulic fracturing.
Avner, what are your thoughts about what we're dealing with in this state? Again, according to the Environmental Working Group, since the state does not monitor, track, or regulate fracking, it cannot possibly know whether the technology is having harmful environmental effects. EWG also points out that Congress exempted fracking from federal environmental laws, including the Safe Drinking Water Act, the Clean Water Act, and the Clean Air Act. In the absence of state regulation, California residents have no protections against environmental damage from the industry that acknowledges that fracking does carry risks.
Well, I think that's exactly the problem. The issue is, as we see it in Pennsylvania and Ohio and other Appalachian kind of states, that the lack of regulation and the lack of monitoring is causing trouble. It's causing people can see the water coming on fire. People can think the water contaminated because of fracking, but it's not. So there is a lot of confusion, and there is a lot of uncertainty. And I think that's what happened when you have this kind of chaotic situation with a lack of any regulation and lack of understanding what's going on. So my recommendation to California, don't follow that track. Don't be in this uncertainty where people wake up when they have a fire in their waters, if there is leaking of stray gas because of the different mechanisms that I can explain later what could cause that. But the issue is that I think that the real message that we are trying in our research to provide, before you're doing any drilling, establish a baseline. So people would know the water quality of the wells, if it's a private well or if it's domestic, to have established a systematic baseline data, including the methane, which is normally we don't measure it in our normal water quality monitoring system, and have that before doing any drilling. And once you have this fracking and you have this activity, at least you know if your water becoming contaminated or not. And I think having, without this regulation, you're going to end up with the same thing we see in Pennsylvania.
Well, and to that, because you say that there is not much science on fracking, what did your study reveal? And tell us a little bit about your study.
Okay, so we've been working for the last 2 years on what could be the possible environmental effect of shale gas exploration and hydrofracking. And we have two publications that came out last year and just last week in the proceeding of National Academy of Science. The first study showed that we are finding high level of methane, which is a gas that having high concentration in your drinking water can be a hazard, and it's not advised to have that. In a level that could much higher than natural occurring. We found that level of methane in houses, in wells that located less than a kilometer from a shale gas drilling site, and it also had isotopic fingerprint. This is the way we try to evaluate source of water and fluid. We kind of tag them with geochemical and isotopic fingerprints, so we know where they're coming from. So the wells located near to the shale gas well had high methane concentration with distinguished isotopic fingerprint that show they are linked to shale gas. It's the same isotopic fingerprint that we find actually in gas that's being pumped. And whereas wells located away from shale gas sites had much lower concentration and different isotopic signature. So we showed that there is a link and there is kind of geographic proximity to the area where you can find this contamination. In the next study, we showed that there are natural pathways that exist between the deep formation and the shallow aquifer. We used the geochemistry of the water to show that the deep saline brine from the Marcellus formation can flow to the shallow aquifers and could cause contamination. However, the study kind of explicitly showing that there is no current contamination. We do not show that the brine from the Marcellus, from the shale gas, causing contamination, but we are showing that there are natural pathway in which the gas and fluid can potentially flow into the shallow aquifer. So in our study, we're trying to see what would happen to shallow aquifer and drinking wells in areas of extensive shale gas exploration. But this is only, as I mentioned, only one part of the problem. The problems are what you do with the fracking fluid or in the produced water that's coming with the gas, how it's being disposed, and what is the fate of those contaminants once you dispose it to the environment. So this is another topic that we are studying right now, and we are trying to kind of catch and to try to evaluate the different aspect of the issue.
And that is Avner Van Gosh. He's professor of earth and ocean sciences at Duke University, where he focuses on water quality and hydrofracking, just talking there about a study he conducted in Pennsylvania. And you can find details about that at yourcallradio.org. We're also joined by Paul Ferrazzi, executive director of the LA-based Citizens Coalition for Safe Community. And today we are talking about fracking, specifically in California. It's hard to know what is happening in California, because according to the Environmental Working Group, regulators have turned a blind eye to fracking. You can find their report, See No Fracking, Speak No Fracking, at our website. So what do we know? What don't we know? Where do you stand on fracking? What questions do you have? And if you work for the industry, we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to know, what about these unanswered questions about the chemicals that are being used and what effect this actually does have on things like water quality? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment at Your Call Radio or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And now I would like to welcome Dan Jacobson to the show. Dan directs policy development research and legislative advocacy for Environment California. That is a statewide citizen-based advocacy organization. Hi, Dan. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me today.
It's great to have you. So I'm sure that you look at this as closely as the Environmental Working Group. What do we know about fracking in California?
Well, the thing that we know for sure is that there's a lot that we don't know. And that's what I think has gotten a lot of legislators and a lot of citizens clearly concerned, because here's a industrial process that involves taking fossil fuels from the ground, and what the environmental group and others have been able to show in the past 12 months to 24 months is that the state doesn't have a lot of information when it comes to fracking. So in terms of where the fracking facilities are, what kind of chemicals are used when they do fracking, how much water is used when they do fracking, what happens when the water after it comes up from the fracking facilities. There's a lot of questions that we don't know, and that's the one consistent thing about what we do know.
And before we get to calls, Paul, I just wanted to ask you, there's a lot of activity happening in Southern California right now. Can you just give us an overview? A lot of city councils are voting on a moratorium.
L.A. City Council asked the governor to consider a resolution to ban fracking, and have a moratorium on fracking. And Culver City asked for a ban, and that passed unanimously. I just wanted to say one thing with regard to Dr. Vengosh's work, which is there are examples of realized risks in Los Angeles already with the topic of gas migration, and specifically the Fairfax Ross Dress for Less explosion was caused by thermogenic gas coming to the surface, collecting in the store, and was ignited by an employee punching their time card. But with Dogger, this is a real issue with me, is how can Dogger define hydraulic fracturing when they respond to environmental impact reports with their policy position that that explosion was caused by swamp gas or biogenic gas? So that's a real issue that I have with the way the AB 972 is written.
Well, we actually have an industry executive who just called in, and we're going to take a quick break. So why don't you keep your questions, and we will ask Tupper Hall, who's Vice President of Communications for the Western State Petroleum Association, right after our break. And if you'd like to call in, if you've got questions or comments about fracking, specifically in California, what do we know? What don't we know? What concerns do you have? And just what are your overall questions about hydraulic fracturing? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment at yourcallradio.org. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. We'll be back after this.
Back to Your Call with Rose Aguilar in just a moment. This is 91.7 FM, KALW San Francisco, local public radio, supported by listeners here in the Bay Area, including Adelaide Jenkins of Berkeley, Robert Ishikawa of Oakland, and Larry Moss of San Francisco. We'd also like to acknowledge and thank our friends at the Four Barrel Coffee Company for their support of local public radio. This is KALW San Francisco.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. You can find more information about our show at yourcallradio.org. You can listen to past shows there and sign up for our newsletter to find out what's coming up. Tomorrow, we'll have a conversation with the National Priorities Project researcher, Matea Kramer, about her new book, A People's Guide to the Federal Budget. What do you want to know about how the federal budget works? The government plans to spend almost $4 trillion next year. So where does that money come from and how is it spent? And then on Wednesday, we'll have a conversation with David Kirby about his new book, Death at SeaWorld. It's an exhaustive book that takes a look at the practice of confining whales and dolphins to pools at water parks like SeaWorld. We'll be talking about that on Wednesday. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about fracking in California. Fracking involves pumping massive quantities of sand, chemicals, and water into the ground, which enables trapped oil and gas to escape. Many of you have seen the film Gasland. We did a couple of shows about it in the last few years. 2 weeks ago, a state Senate panel approved legislation that would ban hydraulic fracturing in California until regulators write rules governing the procedure. So what questions do you have about fracking? Are you concerned about this? If you work for the industry, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we're joined by Dan Jacobson, Legislative Advocacy Director with Environment California, Paul Ferrazzi, Executive Director of the LA-based Citizens Coalition for a Safe Community, and Avner Vengosh, Professor of Earth and Ocean Sciences at Duke University. And Professor Vengosh, can you stick around for a couple more minutes?
Sorry?
Can you stay with us for...
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, great. Thank you. And so now I'd like to go to our first caller. Let's hear from Tupper Hall, who is Vice President of Communications for Western State Petroleum Association. Hi, Tupper. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for taking my call and listening to the program, and it's an interesting conversation.
And can you tell us, what is the Western State Petroleum Association?
Western States Petroleum Association represents the major oil and gas companies that operate in six western states, including California.
So Shell, Chevron?
Yep, all the major household names are members of our association.
All right.
I did want to call and mention, if I may, I mean,
sure.
Certainly the information that your guest from Duke University has been talking about is a subject of considerable, you know, conversation nationally, but I did want to point out that all of that research, if I'm not mistaken, involves production of natural gas from shale formations. And since your program had to do with hydraulic fracturing in California, I wanted to note that virtually all hydraulic fracturing in California, something that's been utilized as a fairly conventional technology for 60-plus years here, is for oil production, not natural gas. So I'm not sure how much of the information is particularly relevant to California. It's essentially the same technology, but the scale and scope of hydraulic fracturing in California is very different. Also, this notion that there's not much information, I think it's unfortunate that what most people have learned about hydraulic fracturing, they learned from the film you mentioned, Gasland, which was certainly entertaining, but we don't believe was an accurate portrayal of the technology. We did a survey on behalf of the Dogger of our members, and our members produce about 80% of the oil in California. Excuse me. And we determined that in 2011, there were 628 wells that were hydraulically fractured at some point during the year. That's out of about 47,000 producing wells in California. So it's not a hugely frequent practice. In terms of water use...
Well, let me ask you about that, because
yep.
The Environmental Working Group has a damning report out saying that California regulators turn a blind eye to fracking. So what is happening? What is being fracked? How often is this happening, and where is it happening?
Well, as I just mentioned, there were 628 wells hydraulically fractured in California in 2011. 80% of that, or 80+% were in the Kern County area, which is where most of the oil in California is produced. It's a It's a region that's produced oil for well over 100 years, very well-developed, mature oil fields. There's a lot of technologies are used to keep that energy being produced for the benefit of consumers in California. I would like to just note that if people have an interest in this subject, to find out what is actually happening, what's being done, what chemicals are being used, you know, the hydraulic fracturing fluid is 99%+ water and sand. But a lot of this information is available, publicly available on a website. It's called www.fracfocus.com.
You can
go on there and look at individual well reports for hydraulic fracturing operations that have taken place in California.
A lot of the concern is over the chemicals.
Correct.
That are injected into the ground.
Saying.
Yeah, I actually wanted you to respond, if you would, to an email we just got from Taylor Bennett, a certified hydrogeologist, and he says gas companies refuse to make public the details of the mixtures of chemicals they inject into wells because they claim that this information is proprietary and their competitive advantage depends on this information remaining secret. Since all the companies are using essentially the same technology, this argument is an obvious smokescreen. And this is the message that we got in Gasland. So how would you address that concern?
I would address it by having people answer it themselves. If you go on FracFocus website, you can look at the well completion reports. And in those reports, there is an extensive amount of data that is publicly available that lists all of the chemicals that are used, the concentration of the chemicals that are used, the volumes of water involved, and the depth and location of each hydraulic fracturing operation. So this notion that there is not much information out there, we just absolutely believe is an unfortunate misunderstanding.
So Dan Jacobs with Environment California, what are your thoughts?
Well, it's interesting to hear the spokesperson from WISPA talk about it. I mean, we've been in Senate committee hearings, and senators have asked and said, is every single chemical that you're using listed on there? And I'm not sure what the end, you know, I'm sure there have been various times, but I'm not sure that every single chemical that's used in fracking is listed in the Frac Focus reports. And if Mr. Hall wants to say that that's the case now, that would be great.
There are procedures. They were worked out, and that's the same procedures that were agreed upon in Colorado. When a company believes it has a proprietary formulation, there is a procedure whereby for a period of time they can not disclose that for trade secret purposes. But if you go on FracFocus, you'll see that it's very infrequently used. The information, there are very clearly defined protocols on how a company is able to utilize a trade secret exemption and for how long they can do that. It is not widely used. And again, I just encourage people who have a genuine interest in understanding this technology to take a look at these reports because,
is it only going to have the 600-plus fracking wells as we go into the future? Is that going to be it? Are we going to be weaning ourselves off of this? And is that where you guys are moving, or are we going to have more fracking wells? And if so, do you think that we should have an opportunity for the public to be able to participate in where the fracking wells are? Should the neighbors be able to know if fracking is happening on land that's adjacent to them?
I did not, I apologize, catch the first part of the question, but I think I get the gist of it. I mean, a lot of discussion has focused this morning on the state of California's regulations and how hydraulic fracturing is regulated and might be regulated. I mean, what is not being discussed is the manner in which any oil or natural gas well is drilled is heavily regulated in California. And those regulations are what have protected groundwater in California for the past 60 years where hydraulic fracturing has been used. The fact of the matter is, and I'm sure there will be people who will dispute this, but I think anybody who has a reasonable interest in this would recognize there has never been any evidence that hydraulic fracturing has posed a risk to the environment in California.
But that's hard to be able to say for sure, because a lot of the information that environmental groups have been looking for and that Dogger has not been collecting hasn't been available.
Well, and let's talk about that, because I'm sure, as you know, that that right now the state of California is involved in a pretty extensive fact-finding exercise. It's one that we have been participating in, as well as community groups have been participating in, and environmental groups. And at the end of that process, we don't have any doubt that the division will probably be moving forward with rulemaking on new regulations for hydraulic fracturing. And of course, you know, we're very interested to keep an eye on that and see the kinds of regulations that they develop. But I mean, to say that you've never found evidence of harm is somehow indicative of a problem. I mean, we believe it's indicative of two things. One, the industry's commitment to operating safely, and two, the fact that the existing regulations in California, the very robust regulations in California, have done a very good job protecting groundwater.
And let me just let listeners know who's talking here, because there's a lot of different voices. So this is Tupper Hall, who just finished talking. He's the VP of Communication with the Western State Petroleum Association. They represent six Western oil companies, including Chevron and Shell. We're also joined by Dan Jacobson with Environment California, Paul Ferrazzi with the LA-based Citizens Coalition for a Safe Community, and Avner Venghosh, professor of Earth and Ocean Sciences at Duke University. And I wanted to bring you in, Avner, because you, again, conducted a study, and I understand that the oil industry came after your study and tried to discredit your findings. Can you talk about that, and then also respond to what Tupper said about there being no evidence showing that fracking results in any kind of environmental problems?
Well, as for the response of to our publication, I mean, I'd rather not talk about it. I mean, I can talk, but I think it's missing the point. I mean, the fact that some blogs were trying to find mistakes in our publication and failed to do so, I don't think that's really important for the listener. I think that the important is to see several issues that came out in the discussion in the last minute. First, the notion that the industry keeps saying we're talking about 99% of water and sand. That's a bit misleading, because the 1% is the one that will make the difference. And any contaminants, the worst contaminant on Earth will be composed of 99% of water. So the fact that you have 1% of something else doesn't mean that this water can be used for drinking or for any other application. So I think this kind of wording, that fracking fluid composed of 99% of water and sand, is misleading. Let's put it on this thing, because any contaminant industrial fluid, the worst you can imagine, will be contained of 99% of water and 1% of something else that would cause the issues. So, and then the fact that this, it's argued that it's being revealed, the formula, perhaps the general formula being revealed, the actual concentration and the relative ratios of those components have not been revealed. So this is also very important, the notion about what we know and what we don't. But the real problem I see, it's not only the fracking fluid. The fracking fluid is kind of, people, as I mentioned, have all the attention, because all you have to see the bigger picture. The bigger picture is how much water we'll be using, because fracking, even for oil, require about, I don't know, 4 or 5 times, I may be wrong here, but considerably additional amount of water that you need for the fracking activity. This is in California, it's an issue you need to address, is do you have enough water? What does it mean, and what sector going to be suffering from that? And then the second question, if fracking causes contamination, again, I haven't worked in California, so I cannot tell. We know from our Pennsylvania study, which could be applied only for Pennsylvania, we really stress out in our studies that the geology plays a major role on the fate of and the possibility of contamination. So what happened in Pennsylvania may not happen in Arkansas, may not happen in California. So it's really important to give a context that our understanding is limited so far, and that's perhaps the problem for a specific research site that we've been working. But the issue is also what's happening to the produced water. We know the disposal of them through deep injection well can trigger earthquake. And on the other hand, just disposing it to surface water may cause contamination. So I think there are many, many questions that need to be addressed in more comprehensive view rather than focusing on the fracking fluids themselves.
And that is Avner Vengosh, professor of Earth and Ocean Sciences at Duke University. We're joined by Paul Ferrazzi, executive director of the LA-based Citizens Coalition for a Safe Community, and Dan Jacobson, directs policy development and advocacy for Environment California. And we're also joined, Tupper Hall recently called in, VP of Communication for the Western State Petroleum Association. And I just want to go through a couple of calls because we have full lines and a number of emails. And let's go through a few questions and then we can address hopefully as many as we can. Isabella writes in and says, what about the argument that fracking would greatly reduce coal mining, which is much worse ecologically if fracking is closely related? Matt writes, is fracking any worse than conventional oil drilling? And we've got a number of callers on the line, so let's hear from a few. Let's go to Harvey in Berkeley. Hi, Harvey.
Hi, Rose. I just sent you a website called Save Colorado from Fracking. And on the website, they say that they use about 10 fracks per, you know, they do 10 fracks per well and 100 million gallons of fluid per frack. So that's 10 times 100 million gallons. So even if they only use 1% of chemicals, that's a lot of chemicals. And fracking, says here also on the website, says fracking chemicals are linked to bone, liver, and breast cancer, gastronomical, circulatory, respiratory, developmental, as well as brain and nervous system. And I say that fracking, the dirty secret of fracking is that the chemical industry uses fracking to pump toxic waste underground, and that's how they get rid of a lot of the stuff. So it not only serves to bring up the oil and the gas, but it's a dumping ground for toxic waste, and it's going to mingle into our water supply.
All right. Thank you, Harvey. We'll get a response in just a minute. Let's go next to Philip. Hi, Philip. Welcome to the show.
Hi. My question, quick question and comment. It seems to me that since the industry itself was able to get exemptions from these Clean Water Act and so on, shouldn't that give you a warning signal about their intention and their tactics? But my question is this: is there any information on what the percentages are or the average is of wells around a fracking site that are polluted? How does that affect it numerically?
I don't understand your question.
The question is, if you have a fracking site and a number of wells, residential wells, what is the percentage of those wells that will be affected?
I see.
Is there any data on that?
Who can take that one?
Well, I'll take it. This is Tupper Hull. It's zero in California. There are no evidence. There's never been a case where a domestic water well has shown to have had any adverse impact from hydraulic fracturing.
Well, this is Avner Vengosh. I dispute that, of course, because in Pennsylvania we show that there are...
Sorry. We
can hold on, please. Let's just let him go and then you can respond. Go ahead, Avner.
I'm saying, at least in Pennsylvania, and again, we are very careful. We're not saying this is apply for everywhere, and the geology and perhaps the installation of the cement on the casing could be the mechanism. But we have evidence for well contamination, at least by methane, in Pennsylvania. And the EPA has some indication there are some contaminants of other chemicals in Wyoming. So there are evidence, which may not be in every case, but there are evidence for contamination.
And Tupper, we have a question for you from Patrick Sullivan with the Center for Biological Diversity. He just wrote in to say it's important to note that frack focus is linked and backed by the oil and gas industry and woefully incomplete. It lists about 280 fracked wells in California, but the oil industry has admitted to fracking more than 600 wells, as you recently stated. So the truth is we really have no idea how much fracking is happening in the state.
Well, you do have an idea, as I just said. There were 628 wells hydraulically fractured in 2011. At the request of the state of California, our members all agreed to begin voluntarily reporting their fracking activity on Frack Focus. So it's true that the website doesn't have 100%. But if you want to know what's taking place and you want to get an idea of what's happening, it's an excellent resource. We also have supported legislation that would require all companies to report their hydraulic fracturing operations. So, I mean, Frack Focus is a website that is recognized and used by the state of Colorado and other states.
And what do we know about, and we just have a couple minutes left, and we're getting so many questions here. What do we know about how much water is being used per well? Can you give us an overall average?
We actually looked at about 100 of the reports, and we're going through the rest of them. And so far, of that 100 reports, the average water use in California is about 250,000 gallons. Per well.
250,000 gallons per well.
Right.
All right. And then the other question I wanted to ask you is the oil industry successfully lobbied Republicans and Democrats to reject a bill that would have required energy companies to notify property owners before fracking on their land. Why does the oil industry oppose letting people know when fracking is going to happen on their properties?
I think it's important to understand what that bill actually said, and that's why there was bipartisan agreement that it was not an appropriate disclosure bill. It required the types of disclosure that notification that was not feasible. It was not really practical, and it was not a workable bill. Again, I mean, look, there are people in California that are not big fans of oil and gas development of any kind, and that bill was one that I think a lot of people recognize was merely designed to make it more difficult to produce energy, more costly to produce energy in California. That's why it was opposed.
Dan, what was Environment California's stance on that bill?
We were strongly supporting that bill by Senator Pavley, and clearly what the oil and gas industry is saying is seen through their eyes. This is a common sense bill. If you're going to frack, you should tell your neighbors what's happening. The regulations that were proposed are common sense, everyday regulations that we use all the time. The fact that they're coming out and saying, it was unworkable is just spin at this point.
And we should say this was opposed by Republicans and Democrats.
I think the oil companies are incredibly in Sacramento. Don't get them wrong.
I think what it was trying to prevent is any sort of baseline study before a fracture was done.
All right. Well, thank you for those emails. Let's go to our next caller. Let's hear from Sally. Hi, Sally. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for putting me through. I was listening to Tupper Hall make claims about fracking, and I saying that there's no data that exists that shows that it's been caused contamination. And I really find that very offensive, considering that they've gone unregulated for so long. They haven't had to report, and there is evidence. And the idea of the voluntary reporting just, doesn't work for me, because, I don't trust the industry at all. And I believe that we need to devote our mind power to renewables, because if we can, instead of being held back by these dinosaurs. And the real big issue for me with the water is people are so focused on the cheap energy idea, but they're not thinking about the expensive water. Do they want to pay $2 a gallon for gas, but $10 a gallon for drinking water? Because we can't drink oil. And I think that should not be forgotten, and we need to remember over and over again what's more precious, our water or oil, because we can live without oil, we can learn to do it, but we can never, ever live without water.
All right, thank you for calling in. Tupper, brief response?
I'm not sure I have a response. I mean, there's obviously a lot of interest in developing alternative and renewable fuels. Our members are major investors in that research and technology, but it's important to have a realistic view about what the timelines are for bringing the kinds of renewables and alternatives into the commercial realm where they can provide the kind of energy that we need to keep this economy going.
What about the concern about the lack of regulation?
Well, we've covered that. I'd be happy to go over our view on that again. There are tons of regulation around oil and gas development in California. If you don't believe that, you need only sort of look at the state codes.
Well, let's get this clear. Dan, is there a ton of regulation around fracking in California?
No. Hydraulic fracturing is a short term, takes about a day or two once a well is completed. Everything that takes place on that well site is regulated by the state of California.
Dan Jacobson, is there a regulation around fracking?
There's not enough regulation around fracking.
Well,
there's not nearly
I'm sure
enough.
Environment California doesn't believe there's
fracking.
Enough regulation around
anything.
All right, we don't want to talk over each other because that doesn't get us anywhere. We will definitely continue this conversation. And again, just a couple weeks ago, a state Senate panel approved legislation that would ban hydraulic fracturing in California until regulators write rules governing the procedure. There's a lot of activity, especially in Southern California. Today, we were joined by Dan Jacobson. He directs policy development with Environment California. Paul Ferrazzi, Executive Director of the LA-based Citizens Coalition for a Safe Community, Avner Vengosh, Professor of Earth and Ocean Sciences at Duke University, and Tupper Hall, VP of Communications for the Western State Petroleum Association, representing oil companies including Shell and Chevron. Thank you all for joining us. Thank you for your phone calls and emails. Thanks for listening. Here's what's coming up tomorrow. What do we need to know about the federal budget? On the next Jor Call, we'll have a conversation with National Priorities Project researcher Matea Kramer about her new book, A People's Guide to the Federal Budget. The government plans to spend $3.6 trillion next year. Where does the money come from and how is it spent? Join us at 10 or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. How much do you know about the federal budget? It's Jor Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast or newsletter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is the executive producer. Pete Misick is our web editor. And Becca Hoekstra is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and produced by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP and Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.
Hello, this is Chuck Finney of Your Legal Rights. If you're facing surgery, please join me this Wednesday evening at 7 for a discussion on how to prevent a hospital-acquired infection and thus avoid having to bring a medical malpractice lawsuit against the hospital. My guest will be Dr. Marianne McGuckin, an expert in infectious disease prevention and author of an excellent new consumer book about how to have a safe hospital surgical experience. That's this Wednesday evening at 7 on Your Legal Rights here on 91.7 KALW San Francisco.
Hello, this is the BBC. I'm Ben James with The Global Conversation. Welcome to World Have Your Say.
Looks like Ashley Cole's going to be their chock eyes. Then again, he's always been a sellout. Shame on him.
I hear you, fella. Chock eyes is classic.
How do you feel about the phrase chock ice? On Twitter, footballer Rio Ferdinand repeated it in response to a tweet about fellow defender Ashley Cole. The ice cream is chocolate on the outside and vanilla on the inside. The phrase is also used to refer to black people who are perceived to have characteristics which are somehow white. So is it racist, derogatory, insignificant? Do you use it or a similar phrase? How do you feel if it's used towards you? We're going to discuss this on World Have Your Say over the next hour. You can join the conversation by posting on facebook.com/worldhaveyoursay.